The noted poet Rita Dove once wrote, "Poetry is language at its most distilled and most powerful." Dove served as the U.S. Poet Laureate in the 1990s. Her job was to extend the reach and influence of the art form throughout the country. And much like the U.S. Poet Laureate, communities around the nation come together every couple years to select someone who, much like the U.S. Poet Laureate, communities around the country come together every couple of years to select someone who best exemplifies work as a poet. In Southern Nevada, the current Poet Laureate also serves as the Executive Director of Arts, Culture, and Advancement at Nevada State College. She joins us now. Angela Brahma, welcome to State of Nevada.
Thank you.
Poet Laureate has always felt like one of those sort of ephemeral titles. It's not really. I want to know what it means to you.
I think as a poet, the opportunity to serve as Poet Laureate is one of the highest honors you can have because, as you mentioned, it means that you've been selected by a community of other poets or poetry lovers and supporters, and that they are standing behind you to endorse you exploring projects to serve your community that maybe you haven't had the opportunity to do in other areas. You know, to really concentrate for a year to two or whatever the term is, on some kind of special project or focus, whenever we have the opportunity to do that, yeah. It's great.
Well, that sort of plays into your role and to your love of poetry. What, in general, what do you think poetry does for people?
I think sometimes it just puts into words things, happenings, feelings, memories that maybe we had never thought of that way, or we lack the language, but someone else reads something or we read someone's book and suddenly we have this sense that we're less alone because someone else has experienced something similar. Or if it's something we don't have experience with, it opens up our world to realize that the world is much bigger than, you know, the circle that we interact with.
Do you think there's more of a need for that in the times that we're in right now?
Absolutely, because I think poetry is also community, and there is so much difficulty and uncertainty going on. There have been so many situations of grief and difficulty that having a place to come together as a community helps us know how to move forward or to address what has happened or is happening.
How does somebody these days get into poetry? How did you?
I was thinking about this question this morning, and the really wonderful thing is I don't ever remember it not being there. I can remember...
Even as a little kid?
Yeah. So I remember my father was working out of town. My mother read to me all the time. I don't have a memory of a lot of children's books, but I remember the black and white checked Mother Goose book with the rhymes. So that might have been the first.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there was some point in elementary school or junior high where I somehow found the poetry books in the library, and the librarian came over, and I don't even know what I was looking at, but she said, oh, if you're looking here, like, let me show you these books. And people just kept giving me books.
So when did you start writing these poems?
I know I started somewhere in elementary school because I had a poem published in the Des Moines Register.
When you're in elementary school.
Yeah. And all I can remember is it had something to do with roses and something to do with thorns. But my grandmother cut it out. She put it in a frame on top of her television. My father had it in his wallet. My mother was really proud of it. So from the very beginning, people just gave me paper. So my grandmother would give me leftover pads of paper. She worked in hospitality at a country club. And so when she came home, she gave me her pads of paper and pen. My mother always provided me with journals. So no one ever talked about being a writer or talked about poetry. They just kept giving me all the things.
So you're from Iowa?
I am.
Are you a country kid? And there's a reason I'm asking this.
No, I know. I don't want to disappoint you. I'm from the city, but.
But it's Des Moines. Is that really a big city? I mean.
Des Moines is a really nice-sized city. It's okay. Really nice. But I did, for part of growing up, we lived for a couple of years in the country when my father was working out of town.
You have two books published. Mm-hmm. In 2018, you published a book, a really interesting title, Plutonium and Platinum Blonde. It's a 36-page chapbook. The pitch line in that says, Girlesque collides with the New York School of Poetry. And then a year later, you published a larger collection called Mojave in July. And the line for that is, walking a tightrope between desert and neon. So I guess I was asking about your background to see if you see or use as fodder, or you keep thinking about the difference between where you were and where you are now.
Kind of always. You know, I led a class at the Wetlands Park this weekend, and I said, you know, I didn't become a Nevada nature writer until I sort of made the transition to say, okay, if you're going to live here, you need to love it. And to love it, you need to really look at it and see at it and not compare it. And the example I gave on Saturday was, there's the book that talks about the language of trees and how they're interconnected. And I said, you know, when you move from one place that you love the land and you identify with it and it's, you know, it's beautiful and everything that's home and family to you, when you move somewhere else, there's this feeling of not betraying the first place. And recently I thought, you know, all the land touches, you know, I can love both places. So my early poetry did talk about what wasn't here.
Yeah, and then, it's a shock to come here from Iowa. And you come to here, it's brown, there it's green.
Right. So and what I noticed is I have one piece called Highway 89 that is talking about the Kentucky bluegrass, the smell of water beneath the soil. And when I made the transition, some of that same language shows up in the poem I'll be reading later, that it's an answer, that you find home in both places, and it's okay to feel that both places are home.
You said you're going to read something later. Later is now.
Later is now.
I wonder if you have something you might share.
Sure. This is the title poem from Mojave in July. And as I said, this was the piece where I sat down and I wrote this. And at first I wasn't even sure if it was poetry. And I read it to a group at the Winchester Center. And they said, yeah, this one. Mojave in July. You can't explain to friends from home how the desert makes it better, but you try. Imagine a heat so dry that it presses down into the earth, releasing its scent so that it takes on the comforting smell of clay pots in your grandmother's kitchen when you were a child. Or your hideout under the evergreens, where you used to sit for hours smelling only the dirt, the sap, the pine. Imagine a smell that reminds you of the kitchen on holidays, sage, rosemary, and something you chase that is reminiscent of honey but feels like love. Some people still fight it. They call the heat oppressive. They call it unrelenting. They have not learned how to live within it. You must learn to smell the water beneath the surface. You must learn to let the heat pass through you, warming your bones, your ligaments, and all the pieces that you call you. Let the heat draw out everything unneeded. Let it put you to bed midday. Let it make you new.
You know, I'm from a place not far from where you grew up. I'm from Wisconsin. Oh. So I'm sure people have listened to me on this program, have heard me use that word, the unrelenting heat. How did you come to, I don't know if it's acceptance or love, that heat and what you get from it?
Well, now I like to call the hot season reading season and napping. So once you say, you know, summer is a season, it's no different than winter in the Midwest. You know, this is the time of year I'm going to load up on books. I'm going to catch up on movies I haven't watched. Everything doesn't stop if you take a nap for a while and get back up and continue your day. So now I really look forward to that, taking time out to do these things that maybe I haven't gotten to the rest of the year.
You mentioned that people at the Winchester really responded to that. What do you notice that people respond to most in your poetry?
I think people that moved here from somewhere else definitely respond to Mojave in July, because I think it's a making sense of something new and deciding to be where you are. Some of my more recent work is touching on issues of disability or accessibility, or even how our bodies change as we get older. And I had held that work back for a really long time because I felt like that was work for me. But getting feedback that there was a hunger for that, and also there's a community for it, that has been really rewarding.
One thing I want to ask you, you know, a lot of people are out there aspiring writers. I think during the pandemic, people put pen to paper, tried to write. How do you do it? I mean, do you need to be inspired? Do you have to have a really strong cup of coffee? What gets you to sit down and go through that agonizing process? Or maybe it's a loving process for you, but it can be agonizing as well.
Oh, it's all of it. I think it depends. I think that maybe there's one or two times a year that something hits me and I feel deeply inspired by it. But most of the time it's work. It's habit. And then it's also being okay saying, maybe I'm not someone who sits and writes every day for an hour. Maybe I'm a person that writes a couple times a year, like in this place that inspires me. And I write that whole week and then I revise in the spring. However, like, you can't be wrong. You can't be late. So however you do the work is what's right for you.
That's a nice way of thinking about it. What about during the pandemic? We've been in it really for 2.5 years. Did poetry play a part in how you experienced or how you got through it?
Yeah, I did a lot of reading. I think my last answer was because I had to make peace with the fact that I wasn't writing. You know, that among friends and other people that I would encounter online when they were talking about writing, there were two groups of people. There were the people that were like, oh, I'm getting so much content. And then there were other people saying, I haven't written anything. You know, and at first, I didn't know what to do with that. And so what I decided to do was I just need to touch something related to poetry. So I printed everything I haven't published yet. And then I just started reading them, sorting them. This I would never publish. This I would. And then I started slow revisions, and I started revising things that I had written 20 years ago that otherwise I wouldn't have looked at it. So revision is poetry work. Reading is poetry work. Understanding that it's different and that you might not read as much, might not remember what you read, yeah. Might not remember what you write. You know, it's valuable to go back and look at my files to see, oh, I revised a lot of stuff then.
It's work, though.
It's work.
How long do you think it takes you to write a poem from start to finish?
When I do write, I generally get most of the draft I want the first time I sit down, which is pretty lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the biggest issue is sitting down, you know, because writing is solitary and people are communal. And it's wonderful to go to readings and open mics and workshops and bookshops and all sorts of things with people. But then you're not doing your work. So finding that balance between the two is always part of it.
Yeah, part of the reason I asked that question is because a lot of people want to write. I just want them to know if you're doing it, it's hard work. But I guess if they expect it, maybe it won't be such a shock when they get to that point where they're getting ready to write and they realize, yeah, the isolation is very difficult.
Yeah.
And now you're on this 2-year stint as the Poet Laureate. What do you want to accomplish in that role or foster?
Yeah. For the Saturday programming, I started with every Poet Laureate does one program a month. And I thought, you know, there's so much happening. I want to make sure that we know what's happening, you know, that we know beyond our neighborhood or our group of friends that there are many poets and many poetry groups. There's no way I can know everything that's happening out there. So I hope at the end of the 2 years, I know more about poets and poetry in our community than I do now. The second thing I really wanted was to not over-program before you even begin, because then there's no room to learn anything.
So this is a learning process for you.
Yeah.
You're going to be absorbing. You're not just going
to
be telling.
Yeah. Yeah. And so on Saturdays, I hope the first one is Saturday, July 9th from 10 to noon at the Winchester. I'm launching a series of offerings that I'm calling Writer Ready, with the idea that I was thinking I have a first aid kit and two. I have two in my car, one in my backpack, one in my kitchen. So I felt like I was preparing for emergencies, but I wasn't preparing for good things. So I thought, as a writer, how many times does someone say, hey, I'd love to publish a poem by you in this. What do you have that's new? Like, how ready are we to have good things happen?
Angela Brommel is the new Clark County Poet Laureate. She'll be celebrating that role with an event tonight at the Winchester Dundero Cultural Center. For more information, go to knpr.org. Angela, thank you so much.
Thank you.